views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
AM. I'm Angel Fall. You're listening to the podcast Victims to Victorious. We're broadcasting live on the BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com platform. My sound engineer is Scotty Reed. Today's show is titled Baby Blankets, Not Bullets. And 2 weeks ago on Victims to Victorious, we had a show called Innocent Faces, Children Shot in Safe Places. Of course, if you wish to join the discussion live from your cell phone or landline, you can call in at 704-802-5056, 704-802-5056. I'm going to recap some of what we did 2 weeks ago, because of course, you know, this is an ongoing epidemic, and the point of Victims to Victorious is to use the radio network to let people know that the gun violence in the African American community in particular is an epidemic. It's a larger epidemic. And of course, the marginalized people are overrepresented whenever there is an outbreak, if you will, to use the epidemiological public health language. Last week we talked about, or 2 weeks ago, we talked about 6-year-old Lyric Melody Lawson, who was shot in the face around, I believe, October 5th. I'm going to recap some of that article. We're taking a look at some of the deaths of children who become victims of gun violence just doing normal things, playing at home, sleeping at home, in a car, for instance. We'll talk about the latest shooting of a child in Chicago. So I'm going to recap this article. The Cleveland School, this is from October 6th, Cleveland School mourning loss of 6-year-old girl killed at home. And the girl, Lyric Melody, was 6 years old, and she was going to Hannah Gibson STEM School in Cleveland, Ohio. So now this article is addressing the fact that there are children mourning children that little. I'll read a little bit from the article. The Cleveland school community is mourning the loss of a beloved first grader who was killed in a drive-by shooting as she slept inside her home early Saturday morning. Again, this article is dated October 5th. In a letter released to staff, Principal Greg Atkins said a rapid response team will be at the school Monday to provide needed support for our scholars and staff sure to be affected by this tragic news. Counselors from Hospice of the Western Reserve will be at the school in the morning. So once again, this article takes a look at the fact that when there are victims, and she of course died from her gunshot wound to the head, there are other people who are impacted. Everyone at the school's life has changed also because of this senseless unsolved crime. The crime happened this way, and returning to the article, around 1 a.m. Saturday, Cleveland police say officers responded to East 171st Street for a child shot. While on scene, it was learned that the house had been shot up, and Lyric Melody, who had been sleeping inside, was shot in the head. So if you have any information, this is me talking, please call Crime Stoppers in Cleveland, Ohio. 704-802-5056. It is known that a dark-colored vehicle was seen driving off, but in preparing for the show, I have not uncovered any breaking news about the suspect. I'm sorry, if you are living in Cleveland and you do know something about the Crime Stoppers number is 216-252-7463, 216-252-7463. It's important if you know something, because in previous broadcasts, I also mentioned that many of the black and black crimes that involve gunshot wounds that turn into homicides or fatal injuries remain unsolved. So in other words, the people who are victimized are not getting justice. Many people point out the fact that they're known to one another, and there's a fear of being a snitch. That's part of it. But also we discussed that the fact that these guns may not be registered gives the police a lot of difficulty in tracing them back to straw buyers or to legitimate gun owners. Now we're going to go to a more recent shooting of a three-year-old boy in Chicago. The title of today's show is Baby Blankets, Not Bullets. If you just tuned in, my name is Angel Fall, and you're listening to Victims to Victorious on the Black Talk Radio Network. Reading from the AP News article, police, three-year-old boy shot in head in Chicago's South Side. This was dated October 14th. Chicago police say a three-year-old boy has been shot in the head while sitting in a parked car with his mother and two other children. Police say the shooting Sunday night on the city's South Side left the boy hospitalized in critical condition. His name wasn't immediately released. Police say three males walked up to the car and started shooting. Bullets struck the rear passenger side, where the window was shattered near a child's car seat. I'm going to read that line again. Police say three males walked up to the car and started shooting. Bullets struck the rear passenger side, where a window was shattered near a child's car seat. Police say the woman told officers she sped away until she got to a gas station where she flagged down an officer for help. And that was in Chicago in the last few days. Since we've been on the air, the internet is reporting about 28 people have been shot in Chicago alone. So we're broadcasting from Cleveland, Ohio. We began the show talking about the tragic death of Lyric Melody, who was a little six-year-old girl shot in the head while she was sleeping. So let's take a look at the demographics of Cleveland, Ohio, where we are broadcasting from. And how does that impact, perhaps in trying to solve this epidemic, how does this impact shootings of African-American children? The ethnic composition of the population of Cleveland, Ohio, and this is from datausa.io, is composed of 186,000 Black or African-American residents. The way that this data is gathered here at datausa.io, again, I want the listeners to get some of the research jargon from me so that if you are listening and you're from a grassroots organization, you can step up to the plate with more of the language needed to solve the epidemic. And if you already are a professional who's solving the epidemic, you can call in and correct me if I've misused any of the epidemiological terms. So 186,000 are Black or African American. This data uses a moniker of alone, meaning people only report one race. So that's 48.3% of the population of Cleveland, Ohio. So it is the largest race in Cleveland, Ohio. 32.9% report being Latino. And, of course, Latino people can belong to different races. Keep that in mind. And white, 127,000. And some people report two or more races. So when you have a formula of poverty, abandoned buildings, low-income housing, housing that's not up to par, single-parent homes, high incarceration rates, these are all formulas for this type of social phenomenon. And I'm disclosing that I'm African American. I'm not trying to incite racism. I'm simply explaining that when you look at the data, these are facts, and these facts figure into the crimes that are occurring. So another article I want to share, and I actually shared part of it with you when I did the first part of the series, Innocent Faces, Children Shot in Safe Places. And there's an article on the Guardian website, and if you are on your computer while you're listening, you can go to theguardian.com, and there is an article that actually just says, why are so many black children being shot? So here is this article. Why are so many black children being shot dead in one U.S. city? Now, if you're following me through the series of our broadcasts, St. Louis is also a hotbed of black-on-black crime, especially the African-American male homicides on one another. And because St. Louis is smaller in population than Chicago, the rates are actually higher. So growing up between abandoned buildings is how the article begins, and empty lots, Xavier Usanga brought love and affection wherever he could. Those who knew him say he gave off joy like it was a superpower, enveloping everyone he knew in the glow. Last month, a day before starting second grade, the 7-year-old was shot dead in a crossfire outside his home. His story is grimly familiar in St. Louis, Missouri, a city of more than 300,000 that sits in the west bank of the Mississippi River, and where 13 black children have been shot fatally since April. Had those children died in one fast hail of bullets, that tally would rank in the nation's 20th deadliest mass shooting. If they had been white, it's likely they would have had more media attention. Instead, these children died in the dilapidated parts of town most people are told to avoid, sometimes alone, sometimes as families sit helplessly by. In these corners of the cities, parents tell their children that loud banging outside is fireworks, but because it's really gunfire, they don't let them outside to see. Xavier was in his backyard. He was heading back from a neighbor's house when two of his older sisters, Trinity 10 and Angel 12, when gunshots rang out. The girls ran into their home where they realized Xavier wasn't with them and turned back and found his body under a bush. They told their grandmother. He took a deep breath and he was gone. Michael Johnson, a pastor who helped support the family, was close to Xavier and was his mother to help identify the body. Johnson said Xavier was a sponge for love. He needed it. He absorbed it. He would never walk in a room without coming to give you a hug, whether you saw him an hour earlier or you just saw him 2 weeks ago, Johnson said. He always came, looked at you, and smiled and wanted a hug. Xavier's mother, Dawn Usanga, told The Guardian that Xavier lit up every room he walked into and was popular with many people in the neighborhood. For 7 years old, I don't know. He was just so innocent. He was so sweet, she said. And if you are able to get on the internet while you're listening, you can go to theguardian.com and why are so many black children being shot dead in the U.S.? And you can see the mother grieving, the makeshift memorial with stuffed animals. You can also see the neighborhood as we described. And there's really good research about neighborhood pride and lack of abandoned buildings and increases in green spaces where they affect the way crimes occur. They bring crimes down when buildings are fixed. Philadelphia is a city that has some ordinance that help abandoned properties with being cleaned up, and they have a direct correlation between the number of crimes and how much better the neighborhood looks when abandoned buildings are removed, when green spaces are operational, when trash is removed, etc. Going back to the article, Better Family Life runs a gun violence de-escalation program. This is in St. Louis, providing meditation, mediation, and interpersonal conflicts that could result in gun violence, and a clean sweep program that works to demolish abandoned and blighted buildings that have overtaken the city's poorest neighborhoods. Stepping away from the article, we've already discussed this. These are all impacting the way gun violence occurs in these neighborhoods with large African American populations, particularly young African American men. They are impacted by this. The crimes they committed are impacted by this. So Clean Sweep is a program in St. Louis that works to demolish abandoned and blighted buildings. And as I said earlier, there actually is a direct correlation between increase in neighborhood pride, removal of abandoned buildings and blighted properties, and a decrease in crime. So the article ends with, since April 13th, well, I'm going to end the article here. Since April 13th, Since April, 13 children and teenagers have died from gun violence within the St. Louis city limits. Now, for the sake of research, I don't know how they are defining children, if a child has to be under 17 for this particular count. So I'm going to read a little bit more about a case in St. Louis. Only one of the cases has someone been charged with homicide, the killing of Santonio Cox, age 15. Santonio was retreating with his hands up when he was shot, according to court papers, was found with multiple gunshot wounds in a lot down the street from his home. He was the second of his mother's six children to be fatally shot. It's like a nightmare that you can't get over, like a bottomless pit, quote, that quote is assigned to his mother. Police have charged two men, aged 47 and 54, with Santonio's murder. The same weekend Santonio was killed, Nyla Banks, age 10, June Ree Thompson, age 8, was fatally shot, and no one has been charged in the death of these two young girls. It's 11:22 a.m. My name is Angel Fall. Follow Victims to Victorious on the Black Talk Radio Network. You can also send me a tweet, On Air Angel, and I will respond. So if you just tuned in, this is part two of Innocent Faces, Children Shot in Safe Places. You can call to discuss your experience, be it professional or anecdotal, 704-802-5056. And the title of this segment is Baby Blankets, Not Bullets. So now I want to return to some of the larger, we're going to take more of a macro look. If you are online, you can go to gunviolencearchive.org. You can also send me a tweet, On Air Angel, and I can send you the link. Gunviolencearchive.org, every 72 hours, they post a gunshot wound victim's incident. So on October 25th, and I'm going to read some of these, on October 25th, in Cincinnati, there was a child, age 11, female, who was injured by a gunshot. Now, there are no names here because this is just reporting. She was shot. They believed it was accidental or a negligent discharge. The child was injured, and there was not a child shooter. Those are kind of interesting demographics. If you've ever seen the movie from Brazil, City of God, they show three-year-olds, the gang inducts three-year-olds into the gang if they have enough hand pressure to shoot another child. And of course, in Brazil, it's much better now, but when the movie was made, there were tens of thousands of homeless children. This gunviolencearchive.org continues to say, in this particular incident, one gun was involved, and the source of the reporting was the Cincinnati Fire Department. Children were playing around with a gun when the boy got shot. So that leads us to other previous shows where we talk about gun safety. How is it that you can keep your gun from being accidentally used by a child? We talked about a lock for guns. We talked about cabinets for guns. We also talked about keeping the ammunition separate from the gun. So this child was injured because other children were playing with a gun. Actually, they're saying that the child himself was playing with a gun. The 11-year-old families initially took her to the Cincinnati Fire Department, there's a discrepancy here. They're using a female pronoun and a male pronoun. So that is one way children get shot, of course. And children are about 3 times as likely in the larger demographic, not correcting for race, to be shot by a gun that's actually in the home. So I'm going to look at another incident of gun violence from the Gun Violence Archive that happened in Ohio. Once again, the Gun Violence Archive updates itself every 72 hours. We're broadcasting from Cleveland, Ohio on October 24th. And by the way, this particular site that I'm looking at, gunviolencearchive.org, I'm only looking at the child injured or killed reports because that fits in with today's title of the show, Baby Blankets, Not Bullets. So on October 24th, in Dayton, Ohio, another child was shot, and taking a little bit longer to pull that one up. Some of the large cities in Cleveland, Ohio, that are dealing with gun violence include Cincinnati, some of the other cities in Ohio include Cincinnati and Dayton. So this particular report is from October 24th. A 9-year-old male was injured. The child was shot and wounded. They also believe this one to be an accidental shooting, accidental or negligent discharge. They know that there was one gun used and the child shot himself in the foot. The child is male. Most gunshot wound victims are male. That's another demographic, be they black or white. So the child accidentally shot himself in the foot. And this, the notes and the sources here say that the police know of 2 people believed to have been with the child at the time of the shooting. And some gun control advocates want to see charges brought against people who have a weapon and that weapon gets into a hand of someone who misuses it. So that could definitely be a topic for another show. So if you just tuned in, we're taking a look at the some of the details of children shot during the last week or so in the United States of America. Because we're broadcasting from the Midwest, Cleveland, Ohio, I'm taking a look at some of the cases that are close by. In Indiana, which Ohio borders, on October 19th, a child was shot. And they also, if you're on gunviolencearchive.org, they also give the address. So remember, the demographics and the location determine a lot of the way these incidents will occur. Now, a 7-year-old child was shot in Marion, Indiana on October 19th. This was a female child, and they believe she was shot by a man who has been charged. Shots were fired into the home, and the 7-year-old did survive but was injured. And that's what we were talking about earlier with 6-year-old Lyric Melody Lawson. It is 11:28 a.m. We have a couple minutes before the station ID. We're broadcasting from the Black Talk Radio Network platform. And my name is Angel Fall. If you have a comment, we can get you in before the station ID, 704-802-5056. So gun violence is an epidemic in the African-American community. Now, in this particular gun archive chart that I'm looking at, they are not reporting race. But if we were to go back and look at some of these addresses, I am sure they're going to be in the parts of the towns that are most likely to be impoverished, highly populated by African American people, and very often there's an absence of a male figure in the home. So I will Angel, come back shortly. Yes.
Hey, good morning to you. Good morning to the listeners. I mean, just as you said that last night, it came back to my remembrance because I always check local news and what have you. And a woman was found shot to death, found in the middle of the road in Charlotte. and it was some other shootings. Last week, somebody killed a man, shot up a Bojangles. I mean, it's really, really bad. It's really bad. But let's take our break. I just wanted to just confirm I'm seeing what you're saying.
Thank you. And I'm sure, thank you, Scotty. Scotty, of course, is the founder of the Black Talk Radio Network and my very skilled sound engineer. And we want people to observe these things. We want people to begin some type of advocacy organization, because in other epidemics, the government and society work to cure. But this one doesn't seem to be following that pattern. And that's going to be my comment before the break.
Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Thank you, Scotty. I just want to let the listeners know about the Black Talk Radio community. I did not, please give me, is it .org or .com? Scotty?
Yes, it's btrcommunity.com. BTRcommunity.com. It's a social media network very similar to Twitter with some small differences.
And it's $24 annually to subscribe?
Yes, a year.
Okay, so I do want to encourage the listeners to go. And is it btrcommunity.com?
That is correct.
Okay, so I want to encourage the listeners, because Scotty works very hard. He's a one-man show, and he's addressing issues that are in our African-American community. And again, I'm disclosing that I'm African-American because I've been on and off the radio since I was 14, and very seldom do I have listeners who believe that I am that until they see me. So I just want to make sure that... that is understood. So show your support with a $24 is your annual subscription, btrcommunity.com. That lets us know that you are concerned about issues in our community and you want to make sure that your voice is heard. So I'm going to return to the word blight that I used and how many of these children who have been injured or killed are living in communities that are blighted. And I know for sure from my own education, researchers at Johns Hopkins have looked at blight and crime in African-American and urban neighborhoods. So I found an article for the listeners to expand on that a little bit. The title of our show is Baby Blankets, Not Bullets. It's a continuation of Innocent Faces, Children Shot in Safe Places. If you want to share a story with us or opinion, you can call in at 704-802-5056. And when the show is uploaded to blacktalkradionetwork.com, you are welcome to leave a comment. We have less than 30 minutes to go here on Victims to Victorious. So the article is called, Can Fighting Blight Prevent Gun Violence? Can Fighting Blight Prevent Gun Violence? You can find it if you're on the computer, nextcity.org/daily/entry/the title. Can Fighting Blight Prevent Gun Violence? I'm going to read from that article. And I mentioned earlier that Philadelphia had worked hard on this, and this article references it. Blight is demonstrably hard on city budgets, particularly the coffers of local police and fire departments, which have to deal with the increased levels of crime and arson around dilapidated properties. Not surprisingly, though, it's also hard on people, even if its impact is harder to track in dollar signs. A new study from Columbia University Mailman School of Public Health, I mentioned earlier people in Johns Hopkins School of Public Health looked at this too, tackles the more complicated but no less important social impacts of blight, with Philadelphia as its canvas. Its findings, cleaning up distressed lots doesn't just increase residents' feeling of safety, it impacts their actual safety as well. I'm stepping away from the article. That's called a direct relationship. You tweak one variable, and the other variable is directly impacted by this, and it has to be measurable. So if you're listening to me and you live in one of these blighted neighborhoods, you might want to organize so that you can clean up the trash, enforce code violations on absentee landlords, and keep in mind these children who died, like Lyric Melody Lawson, for no reason whatsoever. Returning to the article, Plan Philly reports, the 38-month analysis of 541 randomly selected vacant lots around the city found that crimes including gun assaults, robbery, burglary, and illegal drug trades decreased by at least 9% in all neighborhoods that experienced a blight cleanup. Blight spelled B-L-I-G-H-T, in case you can't hear that clearly. Poor sections of Kensington, Allegheny, the Southwest, and North Philly experienced the most significant decrease in crime when the conditions of lots improved, said co-author John McDonald, a University of Pennsylvania professor of criminology and sociology. New data recently released by the city ranks these same areas as among the city's most heavily littered with trash and debris. The process was simple enough. Researchers either appointed lots to receive inexpensive tweaks like new lawn, trash removal, and regarding to stay unchanged as control sites. Control sites mean that they don't do anything. You have to have a control, something to compare the changes to will be my short way of explaining it. Crime data was then gathered from police reports as well as interviews from randomly selected residents. The findings could be significant nationally, not just because they mention a decrease in gun assaults, as the study points out. About 15% of the land in U.S. cities is deemed vacant or abandoned, an area roughly the size of Switzerland. And cities don't have to undertake pricey restoration projects to remedy their blight, which come with the risk of gentrification. Many cities have focused on complicated and expensive responses to their vacant land problem as part of large urban transformation initiatives, report says. While these strategies can change local economic conditions, they can also have the unintended consequence of displacing people who do not wish to move, create further entrenched neighborhood segregation, and may not adequately address the widespread problem of vacant land that chiefly affects low-resource neighborhoods. Restoration of land with very simple tweaks, the researchers claim, can be an effective and scalable infrastructure intervention for gun violence, crime, and fear in urban neighborhoods. The article is actually longer than that. They present the data. I want to unpack some of the things that I mentioned. It says the findings could be significant nationally, not just because they mention a decrease in gun assaults, as the study points out. So not just because they do that, but that's our topic, gun assaults. So in the definition of gun assaults, everyone, of course, who gets shot doesn't die. Certain gunshot wounds are 95% fatal. Gunshot wounds to the head are 95% fatal. But we often talk about the fallout, the grief, the way the bullet can damage your organs or your spine. You're left with one kidney. You're left with one lung after being shot. Maybe you can't walk. But reducing gun violence by cleaning up the neighborhood is a solution in this larger context. So earlier in the article when it says the sociologist and the criminologist, the criminologist and sociological training that the professor has allows him to have two points of view. What is the society doing and how is the crime working? And then in his research, he can create somewhat of a Venn diagram, if you remember that, an overlap of the disciplines to solve a problem. The epidemic of gun violence will not be solved using one method. So the professor who's referenced in this article is John McDonald of the University of Pennsylvania. So cleaning up vacant lots is related to a decrease in crime. And that could be done in any of these cities that we're talking about. So if you are listening to me in Cleveland, Ohio or Chicago, find out if you have a program where volunteers, a lot of times they use people on probation, for instance, help clean up the neighborhood and become active in discovering that once you clean up the neighborhood, you ask the city to tear down the abandoned buildings and bill the absentee landlord. You clean up the trash. You board up vacant houses and see if that doesn't help. The data says that it will, and of course it's inexpensive. All right, so they don't want, if you're in any city, you know that they cringe when something costs. So if you live in one of these neighborhoods, organize it yourself. Think about a little girl like Lyric Melody Lawson or some of the other children, although they're unnamed, who have been shot intentionally. Well, they're seldom intentionally, but they've been shot by someone who's intending to shoot and harm another. We have a little more than 15 minutes to go. My name is Angel Fall, and you are listening to Victims to Victorious on the Black Talk Radio Network. You can also follow me on Twitter, On Air Angel. On Air Angel. There's another article this is the article that we referenced. If you have access to a computer, the report, that was the article written about the report. It's called Citywide Cluster Randomized Trial to Restore Blighted Vacant Land, Its Effect on Violent Crime and Fear. That's a bit of a tongue twister, but I am going to read a little bit from the abstract simply because it contains some of the data. Again, we're thinking of the neighborhoods that some of these children have been shot in. What if they had less blighted properties? What if the trash and debris had been cleaned up? The data shows us that it affects the number of violent crimes that occur, and cleaning up certain areas in this way, the researchers here can prove that violent gun assaults go down 15%. Now, the article uses some language that I will explain. Quantitative and ethnographic analysis are included in a mixed message approach to more fully test and explicate our findings. So in other words, they're looking at different disciplines of looking through this. Being shot by a gun is not a random event the way people think. This is predictable in the population, and certain trends have been very permanent for a long time, especially when it deals with urban African Americans and urban African American males. They used 541 sampled lots. We mentioned that earlier. And I want to explain some of the benefits that they get from cleaning up the lots. There's less vandalism, less concerns about people going outside the homes. People are using the outdoor spaces for relaxing and socializing versus crime. And also, people in blighted areas are not believing that they can control their environment. So these are all kinds of results that they got. So they were able to significantly reduce violence and crime and fear. So a data point like fear has to be measured descriptively. So in other words, they'll ask you, do you feel more safe going outside. And of course, part of the theory is if more families are outside playing in the playground, if there are more green spaces for community gardens, it tightens up the spaces that the criminals can use. And with the blighted buildings removed or boarded up, it starts to tighten up the places where they can hide or hide bodies. So that's just part of the theory, and we do know that it works. If you just joined us, we're discussing baby blankets, not bullets. We took a look at some of the little children who have been shot and killed in the United States of America recently. We began with a 6-year-old girl shot in Cleveland named Lyric Melody Lawson. Her crime, we have not heard. I did not find anyone who has been charged with her crime when I decided to come on the air. 216-252-7463 is actually the Crime Stoppers number in Cleveland, Ohio. If you have any information and you're listening to me in the local area, 216-252-7463. If you have information about the dark vehicle that was seen driving off, or you know the identity of the shooter, the police would be very, very grateful. And keep in mind that the majority of the black victims, their crimes are actually not solved. Their crimes are actually not solved. So what are some of the impact on children who are shot? Now, obviously, poor Lyric Melody, she did not live. But the children at her school in Cleveland, Ohio, the Hannah Gibson School, they are ever impacted by losing a classmate. Some of the teachers, of course, their lives will be changed also. So here is another article that talks about children's impact of gun violence and teens, how they feel about it, how they process information, how it impacts their lives. This article is from everytownresearch.com. Children and teens in the U.S. experience staggeringly high rates of gun deaths and injury. They are also harmed when a friend or family member is killed with a gun. When someone they know is shot and when they witness and hear gunshots, gun homicides, non-fatal shootings, and exposures to gun violence stunts lives, and because of the disproportionate impact, reflect and intensify this country's long-standing racial inequities. Black and Hispanic children and teens are impacted by gun violence at higher rates than their white peers. Because of the deliberate policy decisions that created segregated neighborhoods and underinvestments in their communities, exposure to gun violence has an impact on children and teens' psychological and mental well-being and affects their school performance, among other factors. At the top of the show, we talked about the principal who at Lyric Melody School, who had a crisis team come in, had counselors from that are associated with Case Western Reserve, so that the children can process their grief and their fear. This article appeared in May of 2019, and so of course, unfortunately, the demographics have changed since this article was written. When this article was written in May, children and teen gun deaths per year by intent, they were counted. There were 1,685 deaths of children and teens in the United States, and what they've done is they divided the chart into homicide, suicide, unintentional, and undetermined. So a couple of the reports I read about the children in Cincinnati and Dayton, they could go in the category of undetermined or unintentional because the gun was discharged by a child. Firearms are the second leading cause of death for children and teens. This is a uniquely American problem compared to other high-income countries. American children age 5 to 14 are 21 times more likely to be killed with guns. And American adolescents and young adults age 15 to 24 are 23 times more likely to be killed with guns. And of course, there's a high rate of white male suicide deaths in that number. When American children and teens are killed with guns, 58% are homicides. Children are particularly impacted by the intersection of domestic violence and gun violence. For children under age 13 who are victims of gun violence, 85% of those deaths occur in the home, and nearly a third of those deaths are connected to intimate partner or family violence. That's an interesting statistic. So I had a statistic that said children in the home are 13 times as likely to be killed by guns. I'm not so sure if I'm totally wrong or this is including homicide and suicide. So I need to check my own data for this. But this article that appears in everytownresearch.org says that American children aged 5 to 14 are 21 times more likely to be killed with guns. If that's disturbing to you, I'd like to hear from you, 704-802-5056. We've got less than 10 minutes to go. Of course, if you can't stay around for the next few minutes, please go to blacktalkradionetwork.com and listen to the podcast once it's uploaded. This article appears, again, in everytownresearch.org. I want the listeners to be able to find my references so that you can interact with them or interact with me. Here are some of the findings of the article. Annually, nearly 2,900 children and teens aged 0 to 19 are shot and killed. The previous statistics I got from the Gun Archive website, where every 72 hours they upload an injury or a death of a child, they had a category, and they start at 0. So 0 actually means an infant. That's what I want the listeners to understand. So 0 means an infant, and these particular researchers count you even when you're 19, probably because they want to include all teenagers. So technically, an 18-year-old is an adult, but this is just some of the demographics of the counting for those of you who want to learn about this so you can empower your community. Returning to the article, annually nearly 2,900 children and teens age 0 to 19 are shot and killed, and nearly 15,600 are shot and injured. That's an average of 51 American young people every day. And the effects of gun violence extend far beyond those struck by a bullet. An estimated 3 million children witness a shooting each year. Gun violence shapes the lives of children who witness it, know someone who was shot, or live in fear of the next shooting. The next cause of death, I'm not reading this from the article, the next cause of death for children actually is accidents. Accidents are high in there. Of course, there would be some of the gun shootings are accidents, but in counting them, the policymakers and the researchers are separating out the gun violence in this particular article. A little bit more about race, because we know the African American people are overrepresented in the category of homicide. White and black children, the article says, may live in the same city yet experience it differently due to policy decisions that enforce racial segregation and disinvestment in certain communities. Gun violence is concentrated in black neighborhoods within cities, many of which are marked by high levels of poverty, joblessness, and low levels of investment in education. A high concentration of these factors in a neighborhood is referred to as a concentrated disadvantage, and it is a strong predictor of violent crime. I want to return to a theme that I have here as we tap into public health models. Gun violence in children can be predicted in the same way leukemia can be in children. Remember, the Centers for Disease Control, they have their hands tied a lot of it, because of political legislation that hinders the way they can do gun research. They spend more money researching certain cancers that don't kill as many people, young people, as guns do. So keep that in mind. So black and white children definitely are exposed to violence at different black and Latino children, the article says, are exposed to violence at higher rates than white children. Exposure includes witnessing violence, hearing gunshots, knowing individuals who have been shot. I mentioned we're broadcasting from Cleveland, Ohio. This article takes a look at Columbus, Ohio. Black children in Columbus, Ohio were exposed to 66% more violence on average than white children. In Chicago, Hispanic children had 74% greater odds of exposure to violence, and black children in Chicago, 112% greater odds than white children. When children in these cities are exposed to gun violence, their communities and schools often lack the resources to help them heal. The disproportionate impact of gun violence on black and Hispanic children teens extends to school. Among the 253 incidents of gunfire at K-12 schools between 2013 and 2018, where the racial demographic information of the student body was known, 64% occurred in majority and minority schools. Although black students represent 15% of the total K-12 school population in America, they constitute 24% of the K-12 student victims of gunfire who were killed or injured on school grounds. While the above discussion shows the disparate experience of gun violence by race and ethnicity, the data further shows that gun violence is concentrated in specific neighborhoods and cities. I'm going to stop reading the article right there. And we're going to review some of the things I mentioned earlier about the blighting. So if your neighborhood is blighted and that you have a concentrated disadvantage, small tweaks in the environment can help reduce the number of people, especially today we're talking about children, who are shot by guns and injured. We have less than 5 minutes to go. I'll be happy to take a call if we have one. If not, I will continue the discussion. And remember, you can log on to blacktalkradionetwork.com. Look for the title of today's show, Baby Blankets, Not Bullets, and leave a comment. I really want to hear your comments. I'm especially interested in people who have experienced gun violence anecdotally, who have a narrative about gun violence. If you've come from one of these neighborhoods and you know someone who's been shot, I'd like for you to share that. And finally, I'm really interested in the people who want to use public health models to help advocate for their communities. You can contact Lisa Rose-Rodriguez on LinkedIn. She has a interpersonal conflict training that she can do at your grassroots organization or for your church, Lisa Rose-Rodriguez. Visit her on LinkedIn, send her a message, and she can actually come to your church, your community organization, and point out how you can use harm reduction models to help remove African-American male teenagers from being at risk. Obviously, there are environmental risks, but she's looking at some more personal risks. Gun violence is a problem that has to be solved with a multi-pronged approach. It is an epidemic in my viewpoint and the viewpoint of other similarly minded public health trained individuals. Scotty, did I hear you? Hello?
Hello?
And
point out how...
Yes. Go ahead. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes. My name is Sherry Ann Turpin, and I just ran across your podcast and you were talking about gun violence.
Yes.
I'm interested in us doing something about gun violence when it comes to domestic violence.
Well, one of the things that can be done is the enforcement of removing weapons from men who have been charged with gun violence. They have been charged with domestic violence. The other thing that some people advocate for is a woman to have a pistol in the home if she's been violated by her husband or conjugal partner, but most researchers feel that that is not safe for her because if she's been overpowered by this man, he can overpower her and take the gun. Mm. The other thing is removal of the children. We just
this article explains that some of the children who are killed at home are killed while a domestic violence issue is going on. Does that help you somewhat?
Also, I'm sorry, this is Scotty. I'm the producer. Thank you for checking out the podcast. You can check out some of the past podcasts at blacktalkradionetwork.com. Look for Victims to Victorious, and you'll find all of Angel's past programs. But and we appreciate you calling in. Also, I was in a conversation on Twitter last night, Angel, with someone talking about gun violence in terms of the police, and then they brought up domestic violence, and that study showed that police officers commit 2 times to 4 times the rate of domestic violence against their partners than the general population. And that's something that's not being talked about. And as I also pointed out to them, because you mentioned this, so I do listen and I do learn, but you mentioned this on a past program that they had the highest rates of suicides as well than other professions. So I'm like, wow, you got people with badges and guns who are beating their wives and girlfriends, committing domestic violence against other family members, who are suicidal and apparently homicidal, that we really have a problem on our hands. And I appreciate Mr. Castro, Julianne Castro, when that last debate and they were talking about gun violence, and he said police violence is gun violence as well.
Ooh, that's good preaching right there.
Yeah, and he mentioned Atiana, what's her last name, that the woman who was just shot in Texas. But for
playing video games.
Yeah, with her 8-year-old son. But nephew. But just for the audience, that those may be new, as we get ready to wrap up this broadcast, we're on at 11 a.m. every Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern time every Monday. We're on for an hour. But this show really seeks to solve gun violence in urban areas, in the black community, because there's a lot of gun violence. And as Angel points out, those victims of that gun violence don't really get portrayed as victims in the media. And there's not really a serious conversation about how do we solve this gun violence. And Angel, I also appreciated Cory Booker when they were talking about gun violence. He talked about, in my community where I lived, I had a friend who was killed with an AK-47.
Wow. A potential president explaining that. Of course, we're talking about New Jersey here.
Yes,
so
New Jersey.
All these things are not just anecdotal. Everything I mention on the show, I can prove. And for Sherry, I want to say on Twitter, there's several hashtags that you can follow: domestic violence awareness, domestic abuse, domestic violence. And if you are advocating for women who are in these situations, they need to be warned that you don't tell the potential partner that you are leaving. That's when you are most likely to be killed. If you need to go out the house like you normally would, groceries, smoke a cigarette, and keep it moving. If you live in a jurisdiction that where the returning of the weapons is voluntary, if you know women in these situations, Sherry, ask them to get the prosecutor to be more aggressive with the men giving up the weapons. So children, and the other thing I want to say about domestic violence, Sherry, is that children who witness these type of crimes are harmed in numerous ways when they witness violence. It's predicted that these children go on to be violent themselves, and that domestic violence sexual assault victims go on to be the male children go on to be sexual predators themselves. So I do want to talk about some of that later, but we are out of time. Sherry, thank you so much. Send me a tweet on Twitter. And this has been Victims to Victorious. I'm Angel Fall. Visit the BTRCommunity.com to show your support. Thank you, Scotty, and we'll see you next week.